I'd now like to introduce Andre Chantal, who's from the Augusta Murray River Shire, worked extensively both in Australia and South Africa on sustainability indicators and planning and many other things, but I'll let him take the floor. Thanks, Andre.
Thanks, Ron. Deep in the Margaret River State Forest lives a ferocious species. This species is regarded by many as the Sasquatch of the Marin. It's called the Hairy Marin. It's not in this picture. It's hiding somewhere there because it's a Sasquatch. Anyway, my interpretation of today's presentation is not so much what the challenge is for climate change adaptation in actually doing the stuff on the ground. It's more the challenges that we face in between local governments and all the other different agencies that's out there. I think one of the things that I struggle with as a manager within planning in a local government is there's too much data. There's just too much out there and it starts losing its credibility. And I think it's been mentioned before as well. Saying that the white-bellied frog gets tears in its eyes when you tickle it under its belly is all good, and I love nature or environment as much as anyone else, but it's not necessary to put that into the document and then cram a 30-page document into 303 pages. It's just not necessary. No one's going to read it, and as soon as they stop reading it, you're not going to get the message across. Sometimes there's too little information. We'd like to have the indicators, and I've seen some great GIS show today on the screen, which I'd love to get my hands on. But we just don't always get that information at the local government level. I think there's a very complex environmental management framework set up in Australia and also in WA. There's a lot of legislation, and sometimes there's policies from an agency that ties in with policies from another agency that ties in with local government, federal government, state government, and it just becomes very complex for planners and people on the ground to actually deal with that complexities. This also causes unclear lines of responsibility, and there's no one individual authority saying this is the position of WA on climate change or on biodiversity or even for Australia. And again, that loses credibility if you don't have that in place. And that follows on to duplicate functions of agencies, levels, departments and groups, levels being levels of government and different departments within those levels of government, and then all the different NGOs and other groups. I have tried to make a list of all the number of groups or agencies that have some influence in environmental conservation or management. Every year you have to update it because of the next one, which is restructure. Something will change and restructure, or funding will stop for one program and then you've got to go to another program. Again, that wastes a lot of human effort to try to just coordinate who's still running and who's not running anymore. And again, that would feed back up to the top. And then freedom of information. When trying to deal with agencies such as Western Power or Synergy or sometimes even Water Corp to try to get actual usage information, it's just not free and it's not flowing towards you. So it really becomes difficult to try to establish what you've done. Well, thank you. I now have to phone my psychiatrist and say I don't need another half an hour. I only have half an hour, so I'll stop whinging after that. Welcome to my enormous zoo, as it was called before. The Shire of Augusta Margaret River is part of the only recognised biodiversity hotspot in Australia. We've got 69 declared rare and priority flora species in the area, 43 threatened fauna species, and our biodiversity is threatened pretty much by all the things that you've heard before: clearing and fragmentation of natural vegetation, altered phyto regimes, weeds and feral animals, and then also plant diseases. Biodiversity values in the Shire: 6 threatened ecological communities, 4 priority ecological communities, 59 vegetation complexes, 69 declared rare and priority flora, 28 threatened fauna species and 15 priority fauna species. Sorry, while I was on that, if you can all just look over there to your right, you'll see almost nothing on the left. And I think that was also mentioned a bit earlier about that in denial aspect, people not realizing that they're actually living in areas where there are some serious issues and things that need to be addressed. And climate change is exactly that. It brings with it a number of challenges. The drying climate, the warming or the increase in temperature, which will increase the fire risks, possibly new feral animals to include. And when people were talking about assisted migration, I could just think about rabbit-proof fence and all sorts of other things that have been set up because of assisted migration in the past. But hopefully this will help. Weeds and then also, again, diseases. One of the questions that I'd like to leave, and unfortunately I won't be in this afternoon session, but the question is whether or not we need a single strategy to try to address climate change, or whether or not climate change should be part of all our other strategies that we are implementing as something that needs to be flexible. In our Shire, we've got a few strategies. There's about 7 or 8 listed there. Our State of Environment report, we've done a biodiversity conservation incentive strategy. We've got a very good water campaign with Meryn Delaney, who's also worked on our State of Environment report. And our Director of Infrastructure was just announced to be the Water Professional of the Year for Australia, Wayne Pragnell. He's done some great work in that aspect. We're currently working on our Local Energy Action Plan, which is looking at mitigation strategies, with Curtin University and especially Angela. We've looked at tourism adaptation strategy down in the southwest, what tourism can do. One of the initiatives in planning that we've started was the Rural Hamlet Design Guidelines, and we're trying to put something new in place. And this sort of raised the question on whether or not the city is given up on biodiversity. And I think someone else mentioned it before, and you also alluded to it, Grant. And then we've just recently got our new local planning scheme in, and with that a local planning strategy. And that took a very short 15 years to get in place. So some of those issues are also it inhibits your ability to actually get out there and start doing the job when things like that take 15 years. If I was to put all those strategies into a climate change adaptation strategy, I'd probably want to obviously see what the status quo is first, conserve the habitat as far as possible, minimise impacts. From hearing earlier, we'd probably call that adaptation strategies rather than impacts, and then go towards mitigations. So our State of Environment report is actually quite a nice report. This is the type of displays that I like, and I know that the Generation Y probably would agree with it. You want to see a picture and already know what it says. You do not want to read 303 pages to find out what's going on in the environment. This fairly clearly with green, red and yellow shows red. There's some concern for this current status, fundamental pressures at the moment. The trend is going down. Atmosphere is pretty good. We've got some of the cleanest air coming straight off the Great Southern Ocean, and it's still seemingly maintaining that. And then land is, there's some concerns with land problems. We do have acid sulfate soils, and that's declining as well. Inland waters, biodiversity, which we all have had a look at. So when we look at the habitat indicators, pre-European vegetation, there was about 222,000 hectares of vegetation. In 2007, there's only about 68% of that left. Of that 68%, 29% is within DC reserves, and 44% is in state forests, with only 15% on private land. We've got 9 vegetation complexes that does not meet the 40% retention target, and 3 doesn't meet 30% retention target. So the biodiversity conservation incentive strategy was focused specifically on identifying where there are complexes on private land, where they link up with other biodiversity corridors or other vegetation corridors, and to develop a specific scheme on how we can try to get more of those areas into conservation. We've identified four specific programs. One is a subdivision incentive, where people will, and most of you should be familiar with that, where people are allowed to subdivide their land off and put the native vegetation into a conservation block, which will then be held in a covenant by DEC or a land managing agency. The other one is looking at a grants and subsidies project, where we're trying to people can apply for money from the local government, and we will actually then fund some of their projects, specifically like fencing or revegetation or something like that. What was good is also we identified the biodiversity locations, and those red spots that you see down at the bottom right, that's where Grant's done some of his work, and I think that's the land that got bought into by Colm way back. As I mentioned, part of our strategies, the Rural Hamlet Design Guidelines in particular, is introducing a new concept, which is very new. No one's ever done it before. It's called sieve mapping. Been joking a little bit about it, but sieve mapping's been there for ages. No one in the development industry is actually using it, and we're trying to put it back into the concept of when you are developing a site, how do you assess that site before you start building it or building on it. In particular, we'd like people to actually look at the environmental values, the constraints on it, or the opportunities. Sometimes environmental constraints are so much more an opportunity for a development site than it is a constraint. Developers won't agree with me, but and then also look at all the other aspects of the land. When looking at conserving the habitat, our biodiversity conservation incentive strategy, as I mentioned, trying to put in place different incentives. One of the other incentives I'll get to a little bit later on. Water campaign, we have what Wayne has done with his team is working on three different recycling projects. The initial one has now started, and Margaret River, we are actually using the wastewater that's for the whole town to reticulate our public open spaces, and soon the golf course will be on board as well. Wychcliffe is going to be a whole sustainable water community where a third pipe system will be put in place. Actually, it will be the only pipe system, because they'll be feeding off using rainwater as their potable water, and then have grey water come back to the houses, and similar projects being done in Greystone. Sorry, just with that as well, I don't know if I mentioned, but the rainwater gardens and has been built in Margaret River as well to try to get better quality water back into the river. And most of our new developments has a requirement to have urban, water-sensitive urban design built into it as well. The Rural Hamlet Design Guidelines, as I said, what is new in this concept is to try to limit all development footprints to only 30% of the site. So where you can actually build houses and roads components would only be 30% of whatever the new block area is. So if you take 40 hectares, 30% of 40 hectares is all you can get for development on it. Hopefully that will leave 30% for ecological restoration or potentially conservation of some of the remnant vegetation that's on these sites, and will leave some of the land for productive agriculture. Now, there's been a lot of debate about it. We've advertised the policy, and it will probably slightly change and be about 50% development footprint, and the other 50% then being left open for open space and conservation areas. Currently, most models for this would have 80% as a footprint and 20% left over for open space. So it is quite a significant change. Minimize impacts locally. This is the other incentive that I was talking about. It's a stewardship program. It's really trying to look at how we can get some of the big farm properties out there to manage their the biodiversity values that's on their land, not necessarily only perennial vegetation, but all the types of habitat that's there. Minimise impacts globally, and I think this has more got to do with mitigation, really. We are just about to adopt our local energy action plan, which is quite, I would think a bit ambitious. We set a target for 30% reduction in our corporate emissions, corporate being the Shire organisation's emissions, by 2020. Fortunately, we're getting a new Shire building which will reduce the our electricity use on those buildings from, I think it was 150 tonnes a year to 60 tonnes a year. So we're getting close to achieving it just by doing that. These are some of the targets. Obviously, our buildings and our electricity use is some of the biggest. And the community target is set for 20%. The one important thing is Margaret River does get a lot of international visitors. And as part of that, I'll just show you up there. As part of that, what we are trying to do is to not only project this clean green image, but to actually sort of stand by what we say and actually do it. And one of the things that Council's done a while back with CEDO funding is to put these solar panels on top of our recreational centre. And that's reduced our recreational centre's electricity use by about 8%. It's not much, but it's a start. And it's really about a demonstration project and getting people to know that that's what we can do and how we want to do it. And hopefully then when we do have the international visitors down there, we can say, well, this zoo is really trying to look after itself. How about you go do it at your place as well? Rural Hamlet Design Guidelines, as I mentioned, this is the handbook. And it's really about stepping through the process. One of the important aspects of looking at the land is also looking at the aspects of the land and trying to get solar orientation built into our planning right at the start so that you don't end up trying to build a house in a north-south block. A project home on a north-south block is a nightmare for a planner, I can guarantee you that, because you'll never have any solar access if you're on the northern side of the block, but if you're on the southern side of the block, you might be able to get some. This is to be continued. There's quite a few other things that we'd like to do. I've got a few questions. As I mentioned, did the city give up on biodiversity? It's one of the things that I'd like to find out. Do we need one strategy, or should it be considered in all our other strategies? How do we communicate these trends and strategies and actions to people? And how do we ensure that it keeps its credibility and doesn't become just part of the fluff or that big bundle of information overload?